And we'll get the Friday Forums view on this as well. Josie Bagani and Nick Mills, good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning. What did you just call me before we went on air, Josie? Because that's almost like Ian, as much as I love Ian Castles and everything he's done for Wellington, it was almost like you were describing him, not me, with those comments that he made.
Did you say I didn't hear that?
I wasn't meaning it seriously. I think I called you a neoliberal, neo-colonial, capitalist bastard. But I didn't mean it.
Because
all those words are completely nonsensical. I have no idea what any of them mean.
And that was before you'd even said anything.
And looking at my overdraft on my computer this morning, I don't think I'm any of those things. And
no.
I was thinking, how can I make $1 into $7? I'm almost thinking of the Bible.
It was only because you said it was my choice to live up the Kapiti Coast and put up
with
traffic.
Well, it is your choice.
Yes, it is my choice.
We will get to that because Josie, of course, is a resident on the Kapiti Coast and has her own views on the Kapiti Expressway, with it being back in the headlines this morning with claims, of course, that it has added to people's journeys rather than save people time. We will get to that. Just want to get your view, both of you, if I could quickly, on the town hall, which has been a big discussion point on this program the last couple of days. $90 million of ratepayers' money to get the town hall up to 100% of earthquake standards. A lot of comments saying that the money should be spent in other areas, roading, basic infrastructure, housing and so on. What do you think, Nick?
Yeah, well, my thoughts are pretty strong on this because that town hall was built, I would have thought, in the 1920s, around the 1930s. I don't know, and some listener will tell us when it was built. But it was built in those years for those uses. We're now 2017 and the world's changed. We have the Michael Fowler Centre now as our new kind of town hall, haven't we? We've got the TSB Arena. We've got Westpac Trust Stadium. Why don't we build something new that we have some uses for, that we can use for big events? At a maximum, I think there are 1,600 people in the old town hall. That's about, from when I hired it.
Yeah, it's about 2,500 now. So they could have 2,500, we are told,
from
the council.
That's too small. I mean, we've always saying now that TSB at 4,500 is too small. You know, the Westpac doesn't have any, you know, internal thing for our weather. So why don't we build something that's actually prevalent for this era, this world, this millennium?
Okay.
And $90 million would go a long way to that. And keep the outside facade. So we do keep the whole stuff. Like the El Casino apartments. You go past, you still see El Casino, but there's new modern apartments behind it.
Actually, that's not a bad idea because I agree with you, Nick, because I was going to say, it's a shame to take down such an iconic building. And I don't know whether you know the buildings on Woodward Street, which are beautiful old brick buildings, are all being pulled down. I guess, I don't know, because they're earthquake, they need earthquake proofing, it's too expensive and so on. So, I mean, if you took that to its logical conclusion, well, we just pull down all the old buildings and build modern buildings. But if there's a way of keeping the facade, and you're right, we need some kind of, although that town hall is never going to be the equivalent of an indoor Westpac stadium, right? Because it's so small, yeah. But, I just think it does cost to maintain our old buildings. It would be awful to pull them all down. Mm. Is $90 million, how much is too much? Is $90 million too much?
Well, Ian Castle said that he wouldn't, as a ratepayer, he wouldn't want more than $20 million spent on doing it up.
Well, nuts though, isn't it? That's too little. I mean, you can't upgrade to earthquake standard an old building like that that was built pre the building standards. So in essence, he's saying you're going to pull down old buildings.
But he's an expert that we should be listening to. Mm. This is what I do like about having people like that speak up about it. He is a property developer. He's done plenty of these things. Maybe he could have done it. He could do it for $20 million. We don't know. But, I know whatever the council spent.
Let's ask him. What would you get for $20
million? He said it would be the very, very basic upgrade, just so that people could still go in there. He says that it has been brought up to required standard four times over the years, and it's just going to keep needing it. And others have said, and I don't know whether any of the buildings that you own and operate, Nick, is saying that it's almost impossible to get to 100% of the earthquake standard.
I know that.
So the aim of 100%,
and the commercial buildings have a much higher. Their 100% is different to 100% in a residential house. Mm.
The end of the day is that's a ridiculous amount of money for the and trying to find this usage for it, like the Victoria University and the Symphony Orchestra. They're trying to create stuff to make this look like it's a worthy development. Mm. Do stuff for today.
Yeah, keeping that is stuff for today. And I would like to see, what are we going to get for 20 million? What would we get for $40 million?
Okay, so,
and then let's make a choice.
So the case has not been laid out yet about why this should go ahead.
Give us some options.
Give
us the $20 million option.
Okay, so in saying
$40 million
option. Is this a case where it should go to referendum, where Wellington City ratepayers should have a vote.
You can't decide this stuff on just because you just said we've got to. You're right. We need experts, engineers, people who know what they're talking about to make the final decisions. We don't want. I don't want me and Nick to make the decision.
But that is exactly what is happening. It is me and you making decisions. It's people that we have voted on to the council, but we voted them on to make decisions for us. So we have to go with that.
But what you do need to do, and we talked about this last week, Tim, that the consultation generally that the council does when they do their long term plan or they're planning for the whole city, not just the town hall, but everything that they're going to spend money on. That is rubbish. That needs to be much, much better. We need to be really, it needs to be real to us. You know, do you want to spend money on upgrading bus stops or more frequent buses? Mm. Do you want to spend money on cycle pathways or more trains? I don't know.
And
better roads. So give us those sorts of choices that are real. Don't give us some jargon in a long-term plan that says, do you want to vote for Plan A, infrastructure, something, something?
Well, why couldn't we do that in the election cycle? Mm. Why couldn't we, the really big expensive stuff that we're going to do, have it? Do you want to spend this sort of money? Do you want your money to go, let's get a view of what the city feels
People
like.
People are intelligent enough. If you give them choices that actually are real to them, they will give you meaningful feedback that goes, yep, I want you to focus on the roads, not the cycle pathways, or vice versa.
Love to take some more calls on this. A lot of people have some very strong opinions on whether the $90 million of ratepayers' money should go in the town hall. 0800 8010 8472 1035. Duncan says, I'd actually spend the money modernising Westpac Stadium, aim to put a roof on it to have a large indoor venue like that. As others have said as well. So take some more calls. 0800 8010 8472 1035. This is the Friday Forum.
Call 472 1035 to talk back with Tim Fuchs on News Talk ZB. With Wellington International Airport, it's always cheaper when you book your airport parking online at wellingtonairport.co.nz.
20 minutes past 10, 0800 8010 80 and 472 1035 to join in the conversation. Get to some of your calls coming in just a moment on this town hall issue. Joe makes the point, if the town hall has already been fixed four times, which is what Ian Castle said, why is insurance not paying the bill? If they're not paying, then why? And what's to say they will not pay in the future if another earthquake happens? Anyone know? Is this a case where insurance would cover the costs? Or is it just...
For an upgrade? No, because otherwise all the building owners who have to upgrade their buildings would be calling on the insurance companies. So insurance companies will pay if there's damage.
Damage, yeah.
But not if you are obliged under legislation.
How long since we've used it?
2013. 2013 was the last time we used it.
I think one of your callers said we haven't really missed it.
I had no idea it was that long because I haven't missed it. But that tells you about how it's used, not whether or not we keep an iconic building like that.
Yeah, we'll get to Wellington Airport and what happened there over the last few days in just a moment. Mark says every time Wellington wants to spend money on its buildings, people are horrified at the cost, but New Zealanders go overseas in their droves to see those type of buildings in the UK and Europe. It's a good thing that no one here was asked if they should be built or there would be nothing to go and see here or there either.
Yeah, that's true.
London is one of the most visited cities in the world and the building continues along with the maintenance of the old buildings. They work very hard to keep what they have
there. Imagine saying in London, so we'll take down, we'll demolish St Paul's and build something that's more fit for the modern age.
Yeah, indeed.
It needs earthquake proofing.
Exactly. Let's get to some calls. 0800 80 10 80 and 472 1035. Dean, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Tim. I've just tuned in. I haven't been listening all that long this morning, but nobody's mentioned the lost opportunity cost of doing nothing with the town hall.
Yeah, good point, Dean.
They say, oh, we're spending $90 million. Well, look at it as investing $90 million.
Is it investing?
Well, it is, because at the moment it's sitting there doing nothing. There's no revenue, there's no turnover, there's just nothing there. At least if you spend $90 million... the hall will be up and functioning and running whatever they do there.
Mm. Yeah, I agree with that, Dean. And I think it's good for us to have we should have a debate about whether or not we will, because we were just saying none of us have actually missed it that much because we don't go to the town hall that much. So clearly it needs to be used for more stuff. But you're right, the opportunity cost of not having it, of pulling it down, of replacing it with something that's not as productive, that doesn't create events, and you're right. Mm.
I don't think any of us are arguing over that it should be done or something should be done. It's the price tag, and I just always go back to a step further back. Would private enterprise spend $90 million doing that up?
No. Not a chance.
So that's whether there's an investment in your dollar,
yeah,
or
but
not.
But would private enterprise spend money building a road that's not necessarily economically productive, but helps get people to work?
It has to be economically productive to get people to work, because that actually makes
The point is, it might not be a good enough economic case just for a private sector company to build a road. You need government partnership, because there's a public good.
Interesting. Thank you so much for that, Dean. Janice says, I'd agree with your previous text response that the roof on Westpac Stadium would be a game changer for Wellington in terms of making it an indoor venue as well. Another says, why do up the town hall when no artist comes to Wellington anyway? Look at Cat Stevens, who's not coming to Wellington because there's nowhere for him to play.
Yeah, but that's you build it, they'll come. That's the problem.
Yeah,
and we don't have a facility big enough for those really big artists.
We've got Westpac Stadium, but you're hardly going to hold a concert there in the middle of winter.
You're hardly going to hold a concert there in the middle of summer. You're going to take a hell of a risk if you do it, aren't you? I mean, we're Auckland. Mm. You know, you've got the pop Adele thing. Well, it didn't. The sun wasn't shining on Adele.
No, it wasn't.
And she was being eaten by bugs.
And she was. I was there on the Sunday night, and she got absolutely drenched, as did most of the crowd. But it was an incredible concert.
You know, Blondie's coming to Christchurch.
Oh, Blondie.
Just saying.
What's her?
Who's I've never heard of her. That must be going
back
a few.
She's like 70-something.
Wellington Airport. Let's stay local. Wellington Airport, of course, closed for 36 hours. Flights were shut down for about 24 hours, but they first started happening on Tuesday night and didn't really reopen again until Thursday morning. More than 100 people camped out overnight at the airport. A lot of questions about this on a couple of perspectives, including they had to stay at the airport because there wasn't any accommodation available left in Wellington, about whether we need more hotels in Wellington. And also, an idea which I posed on the program, whether we could take more advantage of the airport on the Kapiti Coast on days like this. What do you think, Josie?
I absolutely think we should be taking advantage of the Kapiti Airport, not only when the fog comes in. I think there's actually grounds for a debate about whether or not Kapiti should be the airport, especially when you've got Transmission Gully and Expressway all set up. The time it would take to drive to the airport would be half an hour, roughly. I don't know, maybe a bit longer. About the same as it takes to drive across town to get to the airport.
On a Friday afternoon?
Oh,
that is just
half an hour from Wellington.
That is nonsensical. It's never going to happen. It's not going to do it. It's like saying,
it used to be the main airport. Well, it used to be a big airport.
And I used to be 17 stone, but I ain't now.
You did not.
I'm just saying. It's just ludicrous to even have this argument. But it should be a backup. It should be a backup airport. Why can't the smaller planes come in and go getting the people out of power?
Yes, that's right. So that's a short-term thing. But having our main regional airport on the waterfront, having a debate about extending the Blimmin' runway into the sea, don't you think, we've got a perfectly good airport up in Paraparam, why don't we move it up there?
Well, it's not a perfectly good airport in Paraparam.
It's not long enough. Let's
just put some figures out there. Wellington Airport's runway is 1,800 metres, and of course there's a big push, which I think all of us support, to make it longer.
Josie doesn't support it.
Oh, you don't?
Well, I think in theory, yes. I just don't think the business case stacks up.
Nick and I do then. Yeah. The runway at Kapiti Airport's 1,300 metres, so the 737s apparently couldn't land there, the A320s couldn't land there, and they have enough trouble actually getting the smaller planes to land there as it is, so that may be the problem.
Yeah,
so
do
you make the runway at Paraparaumu longer then?
So that's what I'm saying, is I think there's a case to be made, a business case to be made for making that runway longer running. I mean, they used to do a flight down to Christchurch,
which has been canned.
Because we seem to have so many problems with the Wellington Airport, I think we need something that's a decent backup. This is the capital city, for goodness sake.
But hang on. We are very, very lucky to have the airport on a clear run, 10 minutes drive from
Good luck
from the
getting
city.
To the airport in 10 minutes this damn city.
If the plane was leaving at 5 o'clock in the morning, I could
get
do
there
it.
In
yes,
minutes,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and let's just sit back and relax a little bit on this. This happens, I can't even remember, it happens probably once a year at most, and it's for 24 hours. Mm. I mean, just just stop and think about it. It's not the end of the world, and some people are inconvenienced, and I apologise as being a Wellingtonian for those who have been inconvenienced. There must be a better scheme too, because I was sitting in my place thinking I should have gone down there and picked up a family and taken them to my house. We should almost set up a thing called Friends of the Airport or something, that we all just turn up in our cars and take them home for the night and give them some, you know.
You could have people like stand up in a row and you could select the ones
you want. No, you always go too far. You always go too far with a good idea, right? You know?
So, I don't like the look of you. You're not staying
well,
in my house.
I don't know.
You can
there
come.
Must be some things, but let's not overreact on one 24-hour period. You know, surely we can have systems that are better to better accommodate when they do happen. There should, you know,
because there's always going to be bad
That's
weather.
Right. Mm. Auckland Airport had to. Remember, they had a dog wayward dog.
Oh, don't get us started on that one again.
They had a wayward dog that stopped the airport
for the dog
5 hours.
Have either of you had to spend the night at an airport? And I'm thinking Josie probably more so than Nick, given his fear of flying. But have you ever had a time where you've had to camp out on the ground or something?
Through any fault of the airport.
Only a fault,
or the airline,
fault of yourself.
Through my own fault. I've also had to spend the night in a public toilet. That was not a good moment. And, on the train, on a floor of a train.
Hopefully you went with an All Black.
No, I was in my 20s at the time. Yes.
I had to spend a night at Seattle Airport once when I was backpacking around North America when I was 25. I got dropped off at the airport by a friend at midnight and I couldn't check in till 6. And so I forced myself to stay awake because I was so concerned someone would come and start taking my bags and everything. I checked in at 6, got through to the departure gate and fell asleep there and had to be prodded awake by another passenger as the doors were about to close. But it's forcing yourself to stay awake is really hard.
So what you do, quite good at it though. You sleep, you put all your valuables in a bag and you put your head on the bag and use it as a pillow. And that way no one can come and steal your wallet and things like that. No, there's lots of systems.
Do you reckon the Coro Club was open 24 hours?
I was wondering that as well.
Were you wondering that? I was thinking about there and then. I was thinking it would almost be worth having a Coro membership. You could go and sit up there and eat and drink as well.
Yeah.
Signing up to
24
it.
Hours.
$500 a year or something. You might as well just
spend it. Indeed. 0800 80 1080 472 1035, 10:30.
ZB Headlines.
Just gone 27 away from 11. Nick Walker's here with the news update. Morning.
Good morning. The man charged with leading Wellington through a civil defence emergency has resigned. Bruce Pepperell has been manager of the Wellington Region Emergency Management Office since October 2011. A newly released report on the country's detention facilities says there are serious issues with some that need fixing. The annual monitoring report is highlighting high levels of unreported prisoner-on-prisoner assaults and the locking in of voluntary patients in mental health units. Stabbing with scissors, fighting in the playground and throwing desks, troubled children are causing chaos in some Northland primary schools. In sport, former Silver Ferns captain Casey Kopua has announced her retirement from international netball. And the weather today, cloudy periods, northerlies, strong and exposed places, a high of 19 degrees.
Thank you so much for that. 26 away from 11 Friday Forum, Nick Mills and Josie Bagani with me. Now, Josie came into the program this morning. Hot on her mind was the Kapiti Expressway, of course, which has been in the news this week with claims from some commuters that particularly the morning commute into Wellington, it is bottlenecking, particularly around Mackay's Crossing, Queen Elizabeth Park. NZTA say this morning, look, unfortunately, there's not a lot we can do about it until Transmission Gully opens. Josie, you're someone who uses this probably during the morning commute most days of the week. What are you finding?
Yeah, that's not good enough from NZTA actually, because there are, and I don't think it's the expressway. I think I've noticed it since January before the expressway opened. There's just more people on the roads. There's a lot that NZTA could do. They could put on free buses. They could encourage people to get on the trains. We could subsidise tickets to the train because it's so expensive to take the train. I mean, that's a big incentive not to get out of your car. They could put on more trains. Even if you go and try and park and get on the train, you can't find a park, so you end up driving in anyway. So I think it's hard for people who are getting into the Mackay's Crossing bottleneck and further down. Where it's really great, I mean, the expressway has been fantastic. And I was just talking to a guy from BM Scott Flooring in Levin, Bernard, and he said that for his guys in Levin, it's saved since the expressway opened, he's saving $1,000 a week because he can get five of his guys in a van into town much quicker because he's missing out that whole bottleneck round pram and Kapiti Lights. That's all clear now. Yes, he's still getting the Mackay's Crossing bottleneck, but it's much better. So, you know, somebody else who lives in Waikanae goes to Team Medical in Coastlands. It used to take them 45 minutes to get through that bit of the road. It's now 10 minutes. So there's huge gains. So I'm not being negative, but honestly, it takes me sometimes 2 hours to get in or out of town in the rush hour.
Okay.
And that's not good enough.
Listener says, why don't people north of the new expressway leave 15 to 20 minutes later in the mornings, bearing in mind that you'll have already had 10 minutes cut off your travel time? This may stop people hitting that merge where it goes down from two lanes to one all at the one time.
How do you organise that, though?
Well,
I mean, it's like having... Don't drive your car. Remember in the 70s, the carless days where you weren't allowed to... I mean, you have to say to people, you've got to leave 15 minutes earlier. You've got to leave 15 minutes. I can't see how that would work. It's a good idea.
Obviously, I can't comment on it because I don't live up there and I don't travel up there that often.
Good, move on. We don't need to move on, Nick.
But I will say that now when I'm employing somebody in a senior management position, I will ask where they live. And if they live at Upper Hutt or Hutt Valley or Porirura or Paraparam, you start thinking, oh my gosh, how many days a week are they going to be late? And that's the reality of business. And so I think it's absolutely brain dead that it's cost more to get on a train and get to Tauranga than it is when you use a car and petrol and everything else.
So it's $20 one way. So it's $20 a day if you're going to take the train. So at the very least, the government, in partnership with NZTA, could subsidise those tickets so your staff, because the productivity must be massive. I know that for me, I'm coming in an hour late.
Yeah, I mean the whole train thing freaked me out because I don't use it that often, but I think that the facility is fantastic. So I hopped on a train in Petone or Lower Hutt a year ago to get into town and pass the guy. Gave the guy $5 and he looked like I was an idiot. You know? And I thought. You know, it's just, you just think
because
yourself,
it wasn't enough.
Yeah. No.
It's really expensive.
Yeah. You know, and you do have to have cash on you as well, which I find very annoying.
But imagine if NZTA could put on two free buses, you know, while we're waiting for
Why should they, though?
Because we're waiting for the whole road to be fixed. They're saying there's nothing we can do about it. Wait 5 years until Transmission Gully's finished. Well, the cost to businesses, the cost to people's lives in that time is too much. So I think that's the kind of subsidy that most people would go, actually, that's money well spent.
But there will be people listening who will say, look, people on the Kapiti Coast, people in Wellington, we've been waiting for this expressway for years and now all we're hearing is people moaning about it.
No, we're not, because I just told you that guy from BM Scott Flooring saying this
That's
is
the
fantastic.
Second plug you've given him. How much discount are you getting?
free flooring for Joseph coming.
The flooring guy in Levin then. Whose name is Bernard Scott, who runs a company called BM Scott.
Three and plugs, that's $300 off, I would have thought.
I've never met him, but I really like his flooring thing.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so the point is that there's somebody going, this is a minute that happened, this is saving me $1,000 a week. $1,000 a week.
Okay, so what we are hearing, and
people aren't complaining.
I just want to summarise that I've got this right. It's great at most times, just not peak time. Because I've used it on a Saturday and Sunday and it's been incredible, but I haven't, obviously because I'm here, I haven't been driving on it at 8 o'clock in the morning where apparently, as we keep hearing, it is really, really slow
I've
going.
Been an advocate for the expressway from the beginning and I really want to continue to be an advocate for the expressway and I am, but it rucks when NZTA just do their, there's nothing we can do here. Remember they did that before the expressway opened when people were complaining on the show saying traffic's terrible, we can't, you know, Mackay's Crossing is completely blocked, and they said, oh, there's nothing we can do. And then they did do something. There were some community meetings, they came along and they worked out something they could do. They changed the schedule for the roadworks and it made a difference.
Okay.
So, can I just say that if you go anywhere in Wellington or a city in the world at 8 o'clock, it's going to be slow driving.
Allow a lot of time.
So, I mean, why don't you just get up a bit earlier? You get up early enough if you're hopping on a plane to go to Europe
so
like you do
thing.
All the time. Have you ever missed a flight to Europe?
No. If you're on the road at 6, I'm sometimes on the road at 6, and it's still blocking.
Yeah, well, peak hour in Wellington has moved so far forward, it's sort of becoming in line with other cities around the world.
Yeah.
It's amazing. 0800 80 10 80 472 1035 if you'd like to join in the conversation. If you want to let us know what the expressway's done to travel times for you, whether you travel in the middle of the day or the weekend. I found it fantastic at the weekends, but the early morning commute is apparently the... the real problem area. And NZTA, of course, saying, look, there's not much we can do until Transmission Gully opens in 3 years' time.
Can I just say something? I was brought up with a saying from my parents, early to bed, early to rise makes a man or a woman both healthy and wise.
And
thank you very much.
Wealthy as well.
Wealthy and wise.
I've also heard that as well.
Right.
19 away from 11, News Talk
Stealthy.
TV.
Now back to the Tim Fooks Morning Show. Call 0800 80 1080 on News Talk ZB.
It is 16 away from 11, hots and knots, and the fruit and veg report, of course, with Nick before 11. A couple of other matters to run through. Talking this morning about the Medical Officer of Health in Wellington, Stephen Palmer, going after supermarkets displaying beer and wine, and about whether, well, he effectively says that if you see beer and wine at a supermarket, it encourages people to buy it, that we are impulse buyers. Nick, you, of course, in your line of work, have had your own issues dealing with the Medical Officer of Health, but to tackle supermarkets over the sale of beer and wines and where they are in a supermarket, how far does this go?
Well, I don't know, but my own personal feeling is when I go into a supermarket or do any shopping, I'm trying to save as much as I can rather than spend as much as I can. And I don't think that I would ever buy a bottle of wine because it looks good or it's in a lane which I'm walking past. And I really do wonder whether Stephen's on a one-man crusade to try and just publicise the damage that alcohol does. We all know the damage that some alcohol can do, but it is part of our society. It is legal. So the cost to this poor supermarket would be in the, you know, I would have thought somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000 for the legal cost alone, and I'm only guessing that. So someone's having to spend a lot of money that they shouldn't have to spend because someone, and he's not going to get the result. He will not get the result he wants to do a crusade and stand up. Mm. How often can you actually pick up a paper now and not read about someone trying to stop something to do with alcohol, or the what happens in the hospital is down to what, you know, alcohol. It gets blamed for everything. So while it's legal, you know, I think Stephen Palmer should sort of chill out and relax and let supermarkets be supermarkets and everyone else be what they are.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a difference between the sort of blanket advertising of alcohol that we have had for years, and it's right that gets regulated. I mean, I saw a figure. Oh, I remember when my son was playing rugby, age, you know, eight, playing Ripper rugby and younger, and it was Tui sponsoring all the rugby flags and things. And you think, come on, that's it. So it's right that you restrict it. It's right that we don't have alcohol sponsorship in the same way as much as we used to have. I'd like to see less of it. But yeah, you're right, Nick. I mean, we go to a supermarket, I want to buy a bottle of wine or some beer or something, and that's different to regulating the sort of market advertising. So I don't want kids walking past endless billboards with selling them alcohol all the time. You know, there should be restrictions.
But if you're in the supermarket and you walk past a bottle of wine, which is on display, are you encouraged to buy it?
No, I'm already wanting it.
Well, this is the thing. I find it ludicrous this suggestion that just because you walk past something in the supermarket necessarily means you're going to buy it.
Oh, but
otherwise, you'd be buying everything
right
in the supermarket.
But he is right about that. I do. You go to the supermarket for a bottle of milk and you come out with marshmallows and you think, what on earth happened there? You know, so there's a lot of skill and art
to
selling stuff.
Control, doesn't it?
Yeah, but what I'm saying, what he's saying, and that's fair enough, is that yes, advertising does have an effect. But my point is, I don't support no advertising of alcohol. It's not an evil. It's not a cigarette. And this is where I differ to some of the alcohol crusaders who I respect what they're doing to curb the amount of sponsorship and advertising we have of alcohol. We do have a problem with young people. I've got teenage kids, and there's clearly a cultural problem of binge drinking. But I don't support treating alcohol like cigarettes where we go, even one drink is going to kill you. No, it isn't.
And you know what? When I was growing up, and I lived in Linden, and there was no bottle shops except for the Blue Heron in Porirua, it didn't stop us getting alcohol. Mm. We drove to Porirua.
If you want it, you will get it somehow.
You know, and the young people that they're trying to stop and detract, they're more clever than we were.
Okay. Yeah, and stopping alcohol pops and things like that, curbing that, increasing the price of that. There's all these things you can do which are really effective.
Okay, 12 away from 11, hots and knots at the moment.
Call 472 1035 to talk back with Tim Fooks on News Talk ZB. JR Duty Free, offering unbeatable liquor savings at Wellington International Airport. T's and C's apply.
9 minutes away from 11, the fruit and veggie report in a moment with Nick, but let's get some hots and knots. Josie?
Well, I just wanted to pay tribute to one of my best friend's sister who died this week, Caroline Boyd. And she was the woman who was killed in Pycock, tragically and suddenly. And I think it's shocked people. She was knocked over by a car. She was 56. She's got three kids in their 20s. You know, the peak of her life, really. And I think it's shocked people even who didn't know her. And I went to the funeral and, you know, you feel just gut-wrenched at a life cut short like that. And she had so much more living to do. But you look at her whole of her life, beginning, middle and end, there it is, 56 years old, and you go, wow, what a life well lived, what a legacy. She was a public servant who believed passionately in public policy that actually meant something to people, was practical. Is this going to make someone's life better? Is it going to make your daily life better? You know, she rejected all the acronyms and the nonsense around some of the sort of public policy that we have. And she had, her three kids got up and spoke in their early 20s, and they spoke articulately. They were emotional, but they were they spoke beautifully about what it was to have her as a mother for 21, 23, 25 years. And I just thought, wow, what a successful life. Mm. And she could have lived for another 30 years, but in that 56 years that she lived, it was just, you know, she was a great friend, a great mother, and a really a leader in the public service, and we don't hear enough about them.
Well said. Thank you for saying that, and all the very, very best to her family in this very tough time. Of course, we did have another victim on the Kapiti Coast just yesterday at Raumati Beach, who was also hit by a car as well. Nick, you've got...
Yeah, well, that story that Joseph said reminds me of a great Muhammad Ali quote. It's not how many days, it's what you do with those days.
Mm. Yeah, lovely.
Well said. Right,
now, my not hot, my quick not hot, is old people's homes. You can dress them up as flash as hell. You can do all the things. You can make them feel like five-star hotels. But at the end of the day, they're old people's homes. And I really have got a problem with society now. Whatever happened to us looking after our old? You know, we are as a society, and it's something that we really need to look in a mirror for. Let's start going back to the way New Zealanders used to be and look after your old, look after your family.
People to do it too, because it's hard when people are working.
Yeah.
Eh?
Okay. Veggie report.
Right.
Going from that to a veggie report. Well, the summer fruits are over. So I yesterday saw a peacherine, and I thought, I love peacherines, and they were bright orange, and I had it, and it was really tasteless. So anything to do with, apart from the yellow fresh Golden Queens, or the version of the Golden Queens that are still out there, most of the summer fruits completely gone. Don't try it. Blueberries and raspberries are still good, plentiful and still good.
Very, very expensive, though.
Yes, very expensive. Guess what? Kiwi fruit's back in.
Oh, good.
I love kiwi fruit.
Now, do you like the yellows or the greens?
Well, it's funny because the greens are in and they're sweet, but the gold, they're called gold, not yellow. That's a bit early for them, Josie. But I asked my fruit supplier, I said, how do you know when a kiwi fruit's ripe? Because you know when they're too firm, they're a little bit hard. As you touch them, and if you can have a little tiny bit of movement in the kiwi fruit, that's perfect time. Now I'm going to tell you about, so kiwi fruit are in and hot at the moment. Bananas, they're all on special. There's plenty of bananas. Cabbages are tight. Collies are plentiful. Broccoli, tight. There is still some broccoli. And Brussels sprouts. I love Brussels sprouts.
And
my fruit of the week is Nachi. Tim,
Nachi.
Tell me about Nachi.
Nachi, we've just been looking into this. They are known as the fruit you drink. According to, there's a website called nachi.org.nz. It is delicious eat or drink nashis in many ways. Cold from the fridge on a hot day, you can poach them in autumn pudding, spiced with winter curries, or preserved for the use in spring with your morning cereal.
Well, nashis are hot, if I'm pronouncing it right, are hot at the moment. As you say, it's a great fruit to take in your lunch because it's like a drink as well. You eat it and it's white flesh.
And it's a blend between pear and apple, really.
Don't
more
put
pear
it in
than
your
apple.
Meal,
more,
don't more put pear it than in apple. Your savouries. Don't put fruit in your savouries. That's wrong.
Nashis.
Love apricot chicken. Pudding. Don't you like apricot chicken?
Fruit of the week. Thank you very much to both of you, Joseph Vigani and Nick Mills. It's the Friday Forum for another week.